Been a huge week of discussion on the Voice to Parliament referendum, with fierce debate over what we know, don't know, or think we know. One of the first concrete steps towards the referendum is updating the laws on how it will run. The government started that process yesterday, proposing to fund an education blitz, but not to put any taxpayer money towards the yes or no campaigns. But when it comes to the model and the wording, what happens next? Dean Parkin is the director of From the Heart. He joins us this morning. Welcome.
Thanks a lot, Patricia.
Opposition leader Peter Dutton says there is building bewilderment at the lack of detail on The Voice. Does the government need to outline what that legislation of The Voice, devising The Voice, actually will look like?
Well, I'd say a couple of things, Patricia. Firstly, it's not actually true that there isn't detail. There's been a considerable amount of detail released into the public space already. We know that Prime Minister Albanese gave the proposed constitutional amendment back in the Garma Festival in August this year, which gave some shape as to what this voice is and what this voice isn't. Minister Ken White led a process for 2 years under the previous government and submitted submissions to Cabinet on quite a considerable amount of detail on what a voice model might look like. So firstly, I think I'd like just to say that there is a lot of information already in the public domain. I think it's important that that information is looked at more closely. And so people will then start to see that, A, there's been a lot of work done on this and a lot of public investment in terms of understanding what a voice would look like, and that it also gives them the opportunity to understand that this is something that is fundamentally about improving the lives of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples in community.
You're right, there is reports proposing kind of a structure, but what we haven't seen, to be fair, is the government say, yep, that's the one we want to legislate, that's our idea. Handing it over in a really specific way, in an exposure draft to the opposition. Wouldn't that help?
Well, I certainly think there are legitimate questions that people have. And I think the questions that we're encountering, not so much with the politicians, but certainly with the members of the general public who are really keen to be engaged in this issue well and with respect, is just forming up a bit more of a concept in their minds about what a representative body that advises the Parliament on laws and policies relating to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people looks like. We have to understand that for the general population itself, unfortunately, rightly or wrongly, there's not a great deal of knowledge about Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples, communities and issues. So what we don't want to do is overwhelm people with a whole bunch of detail straight up front. It is about genuinely bringing people along on a bit of an education process to build people's understanding as they go. Yes, I do think that there is absolutely opportunity for the government to release more information about what a voice would look like, more so than anything else, just to dispel some of the misinformation that is out there and unfortunately is forming part of some of the commentary around this process, which is, as I say, is really about closing the gap and improving people's lives.
The government special envoy, Pat Dodson, says people were being asked to vote on principle, not on detail, but that is a gamble, isn't it?
Well, the principles are really important here. And the reason why they're important is fundamentally people actually agree on them. There's very, very strong agreement around the principle. Well, the first principle is this: that the status quo for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people is just not good enough. It doesn't matter who you talk to, it doesn't matter which political persuasion people come from. For far too many of our people, for far too many of our communities, the really serious indicators, we saw the Closing the Gap report this week, some of them are actually going backwards. The gap is getting wider. So I think it's actually really important. I understand the need for people to want to understand, you know, to know the ins and outs and the mechanics. But some of the principles are very clear and very strongly agreed. Part of the problem with the National Party's announcement this week that they weren't going to support The Voice, I mean, there were a number of problems with it, but it offered no solutions. It effectively said, well, we don't like that. The status quo is good enough. We'll just keep going as we are. And I think a lot of people think that that's not really a fair thing to do, and that we do need a change, and that this voice is absolutely an opportunity to do that.
Now, a lot of the criticism I've heard is that perhaps the Yes campaign, obviously you're on the Yes, you know, a Yes campaigner, have taken too long to provide the information, the campaign, that you've kind of not been active enough in filling that void. Do you think that criticism is fair?
I think the criticism is par for course. That's going to happen no matter what we do. We've spent the last sort of 3 to 5 years keeping this issue alive. I think it's easy to sit back now in December 2022 and go, it's very obvious that we should have been doing this and we should have been doing that. There's been an incredible amount of conversations, and I think some of that criticism is a bit misinformed. It doesn't actually understand the depth and breadth of the conversations that have been had, the quiet conversations that have been had at the community level, at the organisational level. There are thousands and thousands of Australians that have been absolutely engaged on this issue for a very long time. We absolutely are going to escalate the campaign and amplify the campaign in the new year. And I think you'll see that work that's been done over the last 5 years will really pay off when the broader national conversation kicks off in earnest in the new year.
So give me a sense of how you think it's going to go, because we know that the Nationals, you know, there are some divisions inside of the Nationals, but the Nationals have said they'll oppose it. Jacinta Price is a very, very prominent Nationals voice. She's an Indigenous woman and she will campaign against it. The Liberals look increasingly likely that they'll probably back a conscience vote, but we don't know how Peter Dutton will land on it, though. Does that make it harder to get up, given the very difficult history this country has with referendums and getting them up, if not everyone's on board?
I'd say a couple of things to that. And the starting point for this has always been about the conversation between Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples and the rest of the country. It's been about Australians of all walks of life, a little bit over the top of the politicians. We've seen the political class struggle with Indigenous issues for a very, very long time. It's been a very deliberate approach to have the conversation directly with the people of Australia, and that's where this has been. Obviously, we would like to have political parties getting on board with positions of support or at least openness to the proposal when it's put on board, but we've not actually put all our bets on winning the political parties on this. For far too often on our issues, they've really lagged behind where the Australian public is. And I'll just say this: yes, of course, bipartisanship is important, and it's something that we'll, and multipartisanship is something that we'll try and achieve. And yes, it's been a part of the history of how these referendums pan out in our country. But the political landscape is fundamentally different in 2022 than it's ever been. We've seen less, I guess, stickiness with the two major parties. We've seen the emergence of independents, and I think that's been because of dissatisfaction with the type of politics that we've seen played out this week. So, yes, it's important that we try and engage and in good faith and with respect with the major parties. But I don't think it's just we don't just look back and say, well, that's been the important characteristic of winning referendums in the past. We've got to focus on what the context in 2022 shows us. And we think that there's more to play yet with respect to the coalition's position, even the Nationals' position. It's not reasonable to expect that they're not going to revisit this when the proposal is actually put on the table. They've said no to no position at all. So, I think once we actually get the proposal on the table, everyone can take a bit of a deep breath, look at it on its merits, and then start to form positions from that point.
That means you're still optimistic that you can get the majority of states to vote yes, because that's the benchmark, and obviously the majority of the nation at a national referendum.
Absolutely, and that's obviously the goal. We've done a lot of work in understanding what the public opinion has been on these issues for the last 3 years. In particular, we've got a large amount of information that shows that across the board, at a national level, that there is strong support, consistently sort of around that 60% mark still, and across the states and territories that there is majority support there, and so. We get caught up in listening to, I guess, some of the amateur commentariat around this that tries to talk it down, it's really disconnected with what's happening in the communities around this country that are fundamentally seeing this as a reasonable and a fair thing to do, and that it's something that can bring the country together, because, as I said, everybody wants to make practical change for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples and communities, and when you engage them on this issue, they absolutely see the opportunity that the voice provides for real practical change on the ground. So that's where the conversation will continue, and we'll let the commentators commentate, and we'll get on with having the conversation with the people of Australia, because they're the ones that are going to be casting their judgment of this in about a year's time.
That's really interesting. So were you looking at what I find interesting about what you've said is that you've looked at the federal election results earlier this year, and you're saying that indicates to you, obviously people weren't voting on a voice, but indicates to you that the country's changed in some way.
Well, absolutely. I mean, they've very clearly said they've had a gutful of blank partisan politics, of politicians in particular making decisions and announcement not on policy and not what's good for community and not what's really important here, but on some sort of political motivations. And I think that has actually demonstrated in the election results, that you've seen people on really clear issues like climate change quite literally voting with their feet and saying, no, we want something better. We expect more of our politicians and parliaments in wrestling with these issues of importance to the country, as the voice is. Our issue is very much in that bandwidth. And so we think that people do think about this differently than they have in the past. We do think that they want real consideration. And when we talk about respectful debate around this, it's not just about talking nicely and the absence of, you know, sort of nasty words. It's actually also about the fair, honest, open consideration of what's being proposed, stopping the misinformation and actually saying, this is something that we've got to take seriously, because it's a generational opportunity for the country to come together around a successful referendum.
1 minute answer on this, but I know, Dean, that you are articulate and can do it. But I just want you to answer this question that the Nationals have framed, which is they say, well, they've made a statement actually, not so much a question, but they say this won't close the gap. What's your answer to that?
How would they know? How would they know the proposal hasn't even been put to them yet? I think it's a very clear answer. That question of closing the gap, it's a policy question. Their announcement to that this week was purely about politics, purely about politics. And I'd just say, look, let's just take a deep breath. Everyone's tired at the end of a big year. We'll come back in the new year. More information will be provided. The proposal will be put. And then I think the politicians should do their job and consider the proposal properly, and then form a position once that information's made available.
A couple of extra things I want to ask before we get to the news. And this is such a, well, it's a utopian question I'm about to ask, but I think it's really interesting to think about. Just say you get your voice up, a voice is legislated, the gap is closed. I know this is probably a world that you wish you'd lived in, right? But the gap is closed. What will the voice do after that?
Well, it is a utopian question. The unfortunate reality with the size of the gap is I won't be alive on the current trajectory when that actually happens. So that is the actual reality. We have to imagine that the voices of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people have an enduring and important contribution to the identity of the Australian nation, about who we are as a country, that we are not a new country, that we're a country that's 65,000 years and more old. We've got some really big challenges that are going to stick with us for a long time, climate change and land management, which our people have a long history and deep wisdom that can absolutely form part of the national conversation going forward. So this isn't just about filling potholes and fixing problems. It's bigger than that. It's a bigger contribution to the sense of who we are and the enduring wisdom that our nation can absolutely benefit from.
Yeah, that was a really interesting answer, Dean. I know I just went back 50, 100 years. Neither of us and the listeners will be here, but imagining our country very differently. Dean, thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you, Patricia.
Dean Parkin is the director of From the Heart and Kwandamuka Man, and that's a really interesting perspective. I just think the future, let's think about the future. Sometimes we don't talk enough about the future.
Think bigger about the world we live in. Ask your smart speaker to play ABC RN.